What is good, people of Africana?
Yo, yo, yo.
Hey.
So this is how we're beginning 2021. Ish, it's going to be a spicy one. I can feel it because we have got a guest who has got many feathers in his cap. Man, yeah, this guy, he used to be a church usher. He was
a freelance Yahoo boy.
No. He wasn't a freelance Yahoo boy. He used to freelance for the Yahoo boys. He was a contractor.
Consultant, put it that way.
So yes, Yahoo boy consultant. He was almost a TV star, almost a radio star. Then he became a writer, then he became a blogger. And now we know him
and
now.
And a pastor.
And snap. And a pastor.
And was in the Navy.
Hey, I should have held on a little bit. I could have had my own private jet. I didn't realize.
No, you'd have had three.
Yeah, and also, you know, he's a Navy veteran, and now he is, you know, rebranded himself as a podcaster. Wow. Mm-hmm. I really wish I could have done all of these things, but hey, man, only that could be done by Raphael Harry.
That's the best intro ever.
Yeah, that's the hardest intro, man.
But you know, I think sometimes, like, when you don't notice that little red button on top, you know, suddenly the conversation just flows more and more. As soon as you say record, now suddenly people want to freeze up, or they want to, you know, feel like they're saying quote unquote right
things
to say. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
because you're not trying to offend nobody in this world and whatnot. But hey,
do you find it easy or difficult to live in this world trying not to offend anyone?
Honestly?
And you know what? Let me tell you, it's so crazy that you could say nothing. You could literally just be silent and somebody would be offended by your silence. There's no winning, man. Like, anything you do, you stand potential of being canceled quickly.
I think people invest time in the wrong place. Mm. It depends on who's coming at you. If I say something that I need to be educated on and someone's like, hey, man, learn more about this. Why not? I need to. I'll give you an example. Let's say prior to 2016 elections, I was one of these, all politicians, both sides are the same, you know, bashing both sides. And I actually appeared in an advert for Bernie Sanders, the military vet guys for Bernie Sanders and Guardian.
You're a celeb.
One of the biggest mistakes of my life, because I was as ignorant as they come. Because I was like, I was anti-Hillary, blah, blah, blah. And then Bernie lost. But I was no way I was going to support Trump. Because if you live in the New York area, you know Trump is not just a racist, but he's a crook. That guy doesn't pay contractors. New York, New Jersey area is full of little guys who've done work for him. He hasn't paid them. That is alone to disqualify you from being president. Yeah, how many court cases does he have? People suing him right, left, back and front. He loves it. You look at that and you look at Hillary and they say they are the same. They're not the same. They've never been the same. Clinton Foundation, people were bashing it. And I'm like, wait, why are they bashing it? What do I even know about this? And I'm calling both of them the same. I start looking at that language and someone challenges me on the language. I don't have anything to back it up. So I'm with a bunch of, I call them woke people, because now I can't use the word woke. No longer woke, because I don't disqualify myself from being woke. And one of the guys says it's better for Trump to win, because we'll be able to protest. We'll be able to go out there and protest. I said, well, why should I be the goal? Why should I be thinking about this racist winning when I know he's going to do plenty of bad, major bad, and I'm black? He's going to come for me. I don't know in what way, shape, or form, but in the demographic that is going to be damaged, is mostly threatened by this guy.
Yeah,
you are white. Yeah. You are saying, oh, if he wins, we're going to be out there protesting. Don't worry.
And then you said, no. Look here.
So I start looking into Hillary's background, and I noticed that Hillary, today we love Alexandria Ocasio. Ocasio is Hillary Clinton of the past. Ocasio is Nancy Pelosi of the past. But we don't bother to look back. All we do is, because of misogyny, we're like, oh, we hate these people. They've been around. We don't look at it. Even Biden, when Biden was fighting against apartheid in South Africa in the 80s, who looked up to? Oh, that was only Benny. But what was Benny doing then? We don't talk about that shit. We don't hold those people accountable. We only do the flavor of the day. Benny wanted to run against Obama for second term. You don't do that in the ruling party. If that's how he holds himself so high, that he's like, I'm gonna take you out. They had to beg him to sit down. But you know, when I look at all this, and I said, no, it don't make sense. So I'm backing Hillary all the way, and a lot of woke people got mad with me and stopped being my friends. They were like, oh man, you're a sellout. And I said, okay, if that's canceling, then let it be canceling. But there's no way I will support a racist. And one of them, this second election, this dude be coming on Facebook all the time. I smoke weed. I got a great job. I can smoke my weed. I ain't gonna vote. I said, well, you obviously you're not threatened by deportation. It shows that you're a very white person. For you to on Facebook all the time that you have a job that works with the government, federal government for that matter, but every time with weed. But if a black person does the same thing, what happens to them? They lose their job because weed, despite being legal in a couple of states, it's not legal at federal level. So under Trump, they would have lost their jobs. But you still say don't vote because you don't like Biden. You know my mind. I want a Yang. Right. Then they start bringing one issue votes. And I say, man, fuck you. You're a racist, man. I don't care. You're a woke racist. How do you like that? You're a woke racist. He said, oh, man, why you make that up? I said, well, you needed something cool.
Wait. Is that even is that even ideologically possible to be
a woke racist? Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. Martin Luther King Jr. Martin Luther King Jr. pointed out that his letter to letter he wrote in Alabama to the white progressives or the white allies. Those were the white wokes he was addressing. The people who were like, oh, you're protesting. Like, how about you find a different way of protest? This is a little bit too radical. This is a little bit too much. And when you start looking back in places like Nigeria, you see that language had been there for a long time. You know, when I was in Benin City Secondary School, we did Martin Luther King Day. Martin Luther King Day was... that was big for us. If you could quote the I Have a Dream speech from beginning to the end without one error. But it was who could say it with an American accent. You got a scholarship.
Are you serious?
I attended Word of Faith College, which is owned by Idausa, Benson Idausa. Big evangelical, the guy
who's the pastor,
made it big for evangelicals in Nigeria. And Egbenedion School started later on, and Egbenedion School was like our rival. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys on my podcast, we actually discovered that we were hating on each other back in the days. But it's the language was there about political correctness, you know. You say, yes, racism is bad, but you don't hold the white people too accountable, you know, because they love Jesus too. They're Christians. They're more Christians. So all those things, you see how it's everywhere and people shouldn't talk about it. So we have to. I think Coca-Cola had a semi-scandal where they try to bring someone who talks about people should stop acting white and white ideas on their colleagues at work. And then, of course, some white person went and leaked it to Fox News people. And, we should boycott Coke. And that started. And Coke panicked and took the training away. That is not cancel culture. Gina Carano supporting Nazis and all that, claiming like, this is oppression. White people don't know oppression. They haven't seen oppression.
Yeah.
If you have seen oppression, you'll be misbehaving like you're misbehaving today. A Karen goes to a store and is like, get me the manager. How dare you? How dare you not allow me to come in here without my mask? You're pressing me. You're pressing my rights. What the hell are you talking about?
You did that Karen impersonation very well, I have to say.
Well, I've been around a bunch of Karens. And I'm on good behavior when I'm around them. I've calmed down a little bit.
Yeah, like I've got a good example of what you're saying as well, right? Because when you're talking about what do white people, you know, deem as oppression? There's a similar situation here in South Africa where because we are trying to claim back our cultural identity and stuff, you know, we have renamed, you know, certain towns and airports and other national key points and landmarks. So one of the biggest changes was, you know, it's a coastal town in the Eastern Cape. It used to be called Port Elizabeth. So what happened is now it's got a new name. It's called Qeberha.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
What does that mean?
It means white people will never be able to say this.
That means I'm white right now. I'm only like 20 practices.
I guess it means white people in South Africa can't say that.
Yeah. So now the chat is that, you know, this one particular Caucasian, you know, was...
Wow.
No, I'll say it like that. How? So this one particular Caucasian was complaining, like, how are we supposed to pronounce Xebega? And now there was a big, you know, backlash. Be like, first of all, if you know how to say Labasgakdi and all these French and, you know, Dutch, you know, inspired words.
Czechoslovakia, you know, whatever I call that place.
You see?
They tested us in school, primary school.
Mm, exactly. So now you can use all those names now. A young click of the tongue now suddenly... Does it make your tongue self-destruct? What is it? So, okay, like you only to actually hear how to say it. So it's no longer Port Elizabeth. It's now Xebega.
Xebega. Oh, it's easy.
Yeah.
Xebega.
Do you know the truth? They can pronounce it. They just don't want to.
They don't want to. They're not like, Port Elizabeth. Mm. Touch my soul. It said, touch my soul.
You know, P-E, and P-E. You know. So now it's going to be called GQ for short.
Hey, GQ. There you go.
They know how to truncate things, though, because, like, you tell them your, like, traditional name, like, hair anyways. They're like, can I call you GQ? No, that's not my name.
Now, why would you want to do that if I told you that this is my name?
Yeah.
Mm.
There's something that I saw also on that. It's like, before it was called PE, it was called Delgoa Bay. Right, the name changed on the 6th of June, 1820. So the guy who made the post was like, 6th June, Delgoa Bay, everything's fine. 7th June, Port Elizabeth, everything is still fine. You know, so it's going to be fine. I don't know why people are tripping about this shit, man. It's going to be fine. What the fuck?
All right.
Yeah.
When Obama changed, not even changed, because that used to be the former name. Oh, dang, I've forgotten what the name. He reverted the name back to the tallest mountain in the United States, which is in Alaska. The indigenous people had a name, I think it was Denali or something close to that. And it was named after some white guy who had never even been there.
Huh.
I don't even think he saw it. He saw that he just heard about it or something like that. And they named the mountain after him. And during Obama's time, he reverted the mountain's name back to the name the indigenous people had for it. And, you know, Obama was like the first president to visit all the states in America.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, America is like 50 different countries combined. We are not counting the territories like U.S. Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico. And so that's excluded Guam. So if you add all those extra countries, they got mad on Fox again because these people got mad. Obama wore a tan suit, even though George W. Bush wore a tan suit, the same color of suit. But hey, why would they revert the name? Taking away white, you know, you don't want to give white people credit for anything. It's like we did everything we did was bad. Those people already had a name for the mountain. It's like, you know, they had discovered that, you know, I don't even know. I think we were in secondary school and I don't know, we were having a discussion. And somebody was like, wait, so Mungo Park came all the way from Scotland and discovered River Niger that's been there, flowing from Mali into Nigeria. And the native people there, what they've been doing all this time, they just look at the water like, oh,
I'm crying because that's actually what they teach in our history books too.
They touch the water like, this is
like now, discovered it.
Hey, where did they go? Where did that come from? I don't know. The one guy came from Scotland and was like, hey, let me look at it, bro. Look at these people. The water comes from here and it goes there. I discovered it. Hey, thank you, guys.
Well done. Yeah, speaking of discovering, right? Seeing that, you know, you have discovered, you know, this podcast of yours called White Label American, right? So, because, you know, everything that has a name, there's a meaning behind it. So, White Label American, how did that name come about?
And as you tell us about White American, my real thing is, how did you become so knowledgeable about so many things happening in the world?
Because I got bald. Join us. It's a sexy club to be in.
Yeah,
I think Uno is bald now, though.
Me? No way.
I thought you shaved your head too.
I don't think he has fully embraced it. You have to fully embrace it because I fought against it. I'm messing with you. But to the name of White Label American, all right? So before I left Nigeria in 2007, I had always been into this thing. I think Matilda can testify to this. The way they sell newspapers, where they have newspaper stands, I used to be one of those guys who would go stand there. Like you could pay, back then was like 5 naira. I know now things have changed, inflation and all that, so it's a lot more money. But back then you just drop like 5 naira, you read like one or two papers, and you engage in debates with... It was mostly men because, you know, it's a very misogynistic space. You know, we don't allow women. We don't think women have opinions. That's how it was back then. But, you know, so doing stuff like that was part of it. I used to be the weird guy. I was listening to AM. So I'd be tuning around, but it was mostly finding stations around the world. But I did catch SABC once in a while. But it was for music mostly, but listening, you know, once in a while I catch news. And I was gaining opinions about learning stuff, but knowing that people around the world existed. At the same time, it also led to it destroyed my confidence in a way because the anti-blackness in me was building up, family and other ideas being, you know, environment. And when it came to debates, you couldn't bring anything around me. Like, you know, my crew, family, like if we're talking current affairs, I would just destroy you. But a lot of it was still from an ignorant point of view because you can never know everything because there are a lot of stuff I didn't really know. And one time, my uncle, who I didn't really like, said this to me one day. I was like, this boy, you know, this boy, not too much football. Come and go put you on River State Television, where we're living in Port Harcourt. The State TV, his friend was in charge of a program. And I looked at it, I was like, why would anybody want to listen to my voice? I don't have the voice for something like that. And I don't think I look good on camera anyway. So I ran away on the day of. And then another time, he was going to take me to Radio Rivers, and I panicked and just, you know, I was, because I always look at my voice, like my voice did not sound white. My voice did not sound like everybody who I consider professional was white.
Wow.
We always bash NTA. NTA called themselves the first TV station in Africa, but their professionalism was crap. And I never liked their presentations and all that, so I just wrote them out. By the time I got access to the internet, before I left Nigeria, you know, I was, you know, apart from looking porn and all that stuff, I was still also chatting with people, you know, old Yahoo Messenger. You could just hit up anybody. Hey, you know, like pen pal, that's your pen pal. And from that, I found some soccer communities. They were like, hey, we like the way your opinions. You want to write here? So I started writing, and then I moved to the United States. Somebody, I met this lady on old Facebook, and she was like, hey, I have a blog, a website. You want to write? I started writing about La Liga, which is where my favorite club is, but I write, my favorite league is Serie A. And I started writing about football, and before I knew it, people started becoming my friends. That's how I met some of my best friends in New York today, way before I decided I would move to New York.
So you were writing and posting the writing where? Like, where were the people reading your writing?
I wrote on Ole Ole. The guy who had Ole Ole, he's now in the United States, but he sold that some other... I forgot who he sold it to. There was one on High Five. Used to be the place we used to gather at. We didn't know Facebook even existed. High Five.
I remember High Five.
High Five was it.
Unfortunately, one of my closest friends, a husband and wife, a guy from Kenya. The wife was born in the UK, white lady. They both died almost like a month apart last year. And we had a couple who came out from our favorite chat room there. That's what made me go to the UK for the first time too. And I met a bunch of people from High Five, and I lost contact with a bunch of them now. And then Forza Football was the one that got me into writing a lot. Forza Football put me on a podcast in 2010. She invited me to be on the podcast. And when I got on the podcast, I was like, oh my God, nobody is black. I'm the only black person. So I panicked. I couldn't listen to my voice after that. And I just wrote myself off and said, I did bad. I'm terrible. I don't want to listen to this. So I cut myself off. And then I got deployed to the Middle East. I was in Bahrain. Arab Spring came. My life changed. My way of thinking changed. What?
You were in the Middle East during Arab Spring.
Oh, yeah. We'll get to that. That's a huge part of the person you're seeing today. Because without that happening to me, I wouldn't be bold enough to even come on something like this. I wouldn't.
Interesting.
I didn't realize. I thought by growing up in Nigeria meant I don't have Islamophobia and all that. I did have. I had all that going to the Middle East. Yeah, without Arab Spring, certain questions I wouldn't have asked it of myself. And being in an Arab country, seeing how, you know, I saw a bunch of secrets that they had. And that's when I was like, this religious people, this is bullshit. It's just bullshit. I can't. I think I just got fed up with my own religious nonsense too.
So, yeah.
Because I met a bunch of gay people there too.
That's crazy.
First time I hung out, the trans woman was there, and I was like, wait, they got transport there too? But anyway, fast forward to 2016, out of Navy, I finally decided that there's something. It's not bad to ask for help, and I start getting mental health therapy. Mm. And my therapist, because for like 2 years, I've been on isolation. You know, if you look at my Facebook, then you see that I was making jokes, talking trash and all that. It looked like I was fine. But the way I was operating in the real world was I go out, go to work, go to school, come back, take my drink. I don't go out. So I just say hi to my neighbors, go and lock my door. I don't mingle. I don't party, nothing. My party's indoors. That was it. I was in depression for almost 2 years. It was while I was in therapy that my therapist was like, you're not that type of person. You need to get out of the world. The world likes you. You have a way of attracting people, pulling people to you. I started doing volunteering, mingling with a bunch of veterans. We were doing work in the community, hanging out with little kids, giving them, you know, like helping build community projects and all that stuff. And then I met this Nigerian guy, Igbo boy. They're not saying all Igbo people are bad, but an Igbo boy. And he was like, hey, man, I have an idea for a podcast. You're the right person to host it and everything. I was like, this word, podcast. Where this word come? Why is this word again? Why?
It keeps popping up in my life. Yeah.
I thought we're done with it. So it's like, look, he's like, have you heard of Ezra Klein? He just called some names. So I was like, I know Ezra Klein. Fantastic guy. I like his journalism work. And he's like, you're the right guy for this. You're the right guy. So I listened to a bunch of Ezra Klein's podcasts, and I was like, wow, I love it. And I started listening to other people's podcasts. And I was like, yeah, I can do something like this, but in my own way. So we came up with an idea to do a podcast where we'll be talking about African news. We'll just give a recap and give our ideas on what's going on in Africa. And then once in a while, we'll bring African immigrants in the New York area on the podcast. Well, the thing is, I didn't really do much research. I didn't know how to put in extra work for podcasting. And the guy was like, hey, man, I know how to edit. I know how to produce stuff. All you got to do is just buy equipment. So he gave me a list, and it was almost $2,000. So I spent almost $2,000 and bought the equipment. The guy stole everything.
Bastard.
Are you serious? I mean, not that it matters, but I just need to know what nationality was that person.
Oh, yeah, see, he's Nigerian. I mean, he's a guy who I mentored. He wanted to join the military too. So I helped him. I was like a big brother to him. I mentored him how to join. I introduced him, like, the information I didn't have when I joined the military, I made sure he had it so he could make up his mind on what branch to join. I took care of him. And when he went for secret clearance hearing, I was one people who was his referral. So I got to sit down for an interview with an investigator for 4 hours. They drilled me for 4 hours. Because for you to get secret clearance, you need somebody who's willing to do that for you. And I sat down there. They asked me questions. Because for you to refer somebody for that, you're holding information for the government. So they're going to be asking you questions like, is this person trustworthy and all that? I did that shit for this idiot. So my people. we did some test run of recordings, and this guy will switch everything. Like last second, he would switch everything we're supposed to talk about, and I was like, "What's this? I don't understand. I don't understand." And this is not what we had in mind. So I was losing interest in the podcasting already, but I just said, "Hey, give me everything I bought." That's all. I don't even want any financial reward. Just give me everything. And he refused, so we had to go to court.
Really?
I won. I won in court. He tried to fight me outside. He actually spat on my wife in the courthouse.
He spat on your wife?
Yeah, my baby was like barely 4 months old. But that's, I was like, crazy. Nah, if I lay hands on him, it's going to be two black people fighting. Mm. You know, that's what the world will see.
This podcast thing is deep with you, huh? It comes
for a second, I was like, I'm done again. I'm done. You know, I won. The court ruled in my favor because all I asked for was just the amount of money that I spent. He still hasn't paid me to this day because he doesn't live in New York City. He lives outside New York City, so it's a different legal system. It's just hectic dealing with that. But while I was angry and frustrated, another friend came to me and said, hey, we listened to a few episodes you did with that guy. He didn't sound like, you know, he was interested, but you were the person we were listening for. Mm-hmm. Are you going to do a podcast again? You should do something. I said, hell no, I'm not doing that. I'm wasting my, I hate this podcast world. It's too dramatic. Mm-hmm. But people kept reaching out to me. I'm like, hey, man, you going to do something or not? So I was like, okay, if I do something this time, I'm going to make it, you know, my idea. And every time I go out, you know, if I take a taxi or if I go somewhere, if I meet an immigrant or someone from somewhere, we always connect on something. And they start sharing their stories with me. And I realized that, hey, it doesn't matter if you're from Uzbekistan, if you were born in Nassau, Malaysia, the threads that connect us are so many. But it's just that artificial walls have been set up by colonialism, by religion, by so many other factors. We've made life so complicated that we now say, oh, I have to build my clique. You're bad. You're this, you're that. But you've never really heard from people who grew up in another place. You don't even know what they like. You don't even know their culture. You don't even know who they are. We just assume, we judge, and then we judge some people based on their government. That's all we do. But you don't know the person there. So what if I start talking to people from each part of the world? You know, New York City is a huge market. It has everywhere. And that's where my boy's like, why don't you name it White Label American? I said, that name sounds racist. He's like, it's a business term. Businesses do white labeling all the time. They take something that exists and relabel it and make it their own. And I said, that's true. That's perfect for America because America existed. And then some white guys showed up and said, this is how it's going to be. This was America. And everybody who moved to America, it was based on the white people's dream. That's what the American dream is. If you ask all our parents, if you ask all our uncles, aunts, when you say, what's the American dream? Who's the family that you saw that you said, the American dream I'm chasing? It's not based on a black family. It's not based on a brown family. It's based on the white people, on the white family.
But white living in
America, I'm giving people the chance to retell their story. Yes, you talk about your failure, you talk about your success, and then the pandemic happened, and I couldn't just from New York City alone. Some guys who were in California and other places said they want to come on podcast, and then I was like, wait, you know what? I'm in charge of this. I can change it. I can evolve, and I can allow people from other countries to tell their stories. But at the end of the day, it is about breaking down artificial walls. And if we only keep allowing the same people tell the same stories, we are not going to move forward.
You know,
now the only people who I want to allow on the podcast are far right people to come here and say, oh, fuck them immigrants. You don't belong in America. Nah, I don't care about you. You already have your platform. Go. But I need people who understand, you know, I humanize people. You know, we have that. We have a discussion. It's fun. It's not too crazy. But, you know, I've had my boy who came 2 weeks ago. He just moved to the United States March last year, to New York, March last year. He had been here before, but his official move to New York was March last year. His first wife died. She committed suicide. Jeez. You don't get many people talking about something like that. But he had come, he was born and raised in Argentina, country that during the military rule, many people were killed, and his family had to hide, change their names. And when he talks about stuff like that, many people in Africa can associate with that. If you, you know, in this episode, you're like, but he talks about how Argentina moved forward from that. It is something that we need to do, but we don't talk about. We only talk about, oh, yeah, we need new leader. What the new leader going to do? The new leader just jumps in. Well, we need to hear stories like this, because you hear little things. That's how you bring out a visual wall, one story at a time. So that's what I hope to do.
Hey, man, I'm listening to what you're saying and your concept, and you know, it is more than I realized of a privilege to have you here with us. You know, like what you're saying is something that, you know, it's part of our reason for even having this platform, African Express. You know, we're not trying to talk to high profile people. We want to talk to Africans all over the world who are doing crazy shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, just sharing their stories. And like your story, man, your story, actually, when I listen to it now, it's blowing my mind. And I'm actually really, really, honestly, I'm really glad that we can even chat to you, man, because like, and I'm also glad that, you know, things have aligned themselves. You spend so much time running away from it and even being discouraged by circumstance, but here you are doing it still, and you're doing it your way. You know, you took charge of that, you know, and it's encouraging, man. It's encouraging, for real.
Thank you. The privilege is all mine. And shout out to Africa Podfest for bringing us together. Without them, I wouldn't have known about you guys because, you know, when I started the podcast, my ignorance was also still high that I was only focusing on people in the New York vicinity, the mostly American vicinity. And I didn't even realize that, you know, I needed to connect to people on the continent. And the more I started listening to people on the continent, I'm like, yeah, even when I have something I disagree with you guys on, I'm still learning from you guys. And I'm like, yeah, you know, there's a whole bunch of podcasters on the continent. And it's so beautiful because I see mistakes that I was making. I was like, when I was that age, or a few years back, look at, I wasn't even thinking this far. I wasn't even seeing the picture. And I'm like, this is so beautiful because we are taking ownership of the platform.
Our narratives. Yeah.
Yeah, of the narratives. Yeah. And when I look back to the years when I had the chance to be on radio and be on TV, and I was so afraid, and I was like, if only I'd known that there was something like this that existed, you know, it would have been different. But at the same time, I'm glad because the person who I was a lot more far right. And people don't believe that, but yes.
No, I completely believe it.
But looking back, I can see little periods in my life where the cracks began, you know, where I was like, hey, you know, at one point in time, I believed in the war on drugs. I believed in it.
Oh, man. Wow.
Everybody around me said, if you smoke weed, you're a bad person. That was just a message. It's bad people that smoke weed. You're criminals that smoke weed. But my uncle, my favorite uncle, every time he visited, he always played Fellaini songs from Fellaini. That was his record. He always go put on Fellaini be dancing. I'm like, yeah, I like this. And then, why are you playing this song? You know, but then I see the way they treated the poor people who smoke weed. And then I see the richest person in the family smoking weed one day, and I'm like, I'm confused. And I'm like, shut up! I'm asking questions. First day I found out somebody in my family was a homosexual. Same thing. I'm like, but I didn't really know. I'm praying, sending all of them to hellfire. Go straight to hellfire in the name of Jesus. Go! Like, I didn't even know anybody.
Sounding like a Nigerian pastor.
Dude, my sister, I think my elder sister, we can't talk anymore. There's nothing to talk about. We can't have the conversation. She is the most evangelical person that I know. And I think one of our biggest disappointments is that I never became a pastor because she's seen me preach one or two times back in those days.
Wow.
And the expectation was, they sent me to Bible school. I would tell one quick story on another thing I experienced while I was working at that church. Matilda knows the church. You guys probably know the church I'm talking about because I wouldn't be surprised if they have branches in South Africa too.
If it's got international at the end of it, then most likely
it's called Living Faith Ministries. Is it Living Faith Ministries or Living Faith? The nickname is Winners Chapel.
Yeah, and yep. They are here too.
So their headquarters, the claim to fame is that they built the tabernacle. They built it in like 9 months. And I was living in Ibadan, which was about, back then, without traffic, was like 40 minutes drive to Canaan Land, which is what it's called now. And we had to dedicate one day, like every month, we dedicate one day to go down there and work, like do full manual labor. Sweat, my back, man. God damn. When I think about it, I'm like, God damn, I did all that. But that's not even the worst thing that I experienced at that church because I know for a fact that a child died while I was on duty one day because the bishops and the pastors, they don't attend service from the beginning. So they're coming, it's like the choir. When the choir is singing, that's when they leave the office. And this was when they were building the Ibadan, the tabernacle for the Ibadan branch. So the former, I think they now use that as a hall, multi-purpose hall or whatever they use it for now. I can't even recall. But they were building the main tabernacle. And so that used to be close to where the church offices were. Mm-hmm. So the bishop and his squad, it's like a mafia thing, the squad. And the bishop is like 6'4", 6'5". So he's a very tall, big guy. And all the pastors are small, short people around him. They're all marching together, coming towards the church building while the choir is singing, because after the choir finishes singing and the bishop walks in, enters and then starts preaching. So they come in, and then this woman is coming from the opposite direction. She has a child in her arms, and the child she's carrying, that child, for all I could tell, that child was either dead or almost dead But she's crying, running towards Bishop, and you see the child's arms dangling. You've seen someone who's passed out, someone who's, you know, it's either gone or almost close to gone. If you've ever seen that in person, you know. So this child's probably like between the ages of 8 and 10. And she's crying, like running. She should have gone to the hospital. That's where she should have gone. But if you were hardcore into Winner's Chapel, you don't say you are sick, you say I am well, because you have faith. So the church is not the first way you can come to church, right?
Right.
Luckily, she timed her visit when Bishop and the squad were going in. So I'm like, wow, I'm about to see this miracle, because everybody be giving testimonies, right? Everybody give testimony. I see it on TV. You know, I've seen it face to face. So Bishop, you know, the security team that Bishop has try to stop him, and Bishop can see past them because he's way taller. And he's like, hey, let her come. And she comes, and they all form a circle around, and they start praying. Hey, I am there too. I'm praying for my father. Like, praise the Lord. Today is the day. Today is the day I'm going to see this miracle. The dead shall rise. Dry bones shall rise again. Yeah. My brother. After like 5 minutes, that's all I saw was Bishop shake his head like, today, my picking don't die. His picking don't die, but look at it. Taps one on our shoulder. Yeah, good luck with you. That's what it looked like. Tapped her on the shoulder, and my guy marched away. Nobody could put hand in their pocket and bring her, like, you know, take this for transport fare or something. Everybody just tapped on the shoulder.
Walked away?
And started walking away into the church. And so I'm there, but I was so deep in this belief system that I was like, I don't know. I'm confused. I don't know. I don't know. Now the child's body is stiff. It's no movement. Before it was just like dangling, but now it was stiff. And the woman has her head down, and she's just holding the child. It was the deacon who was in charge of us that now walks up to her and escorts her away out of the church premises. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to register this. I was confused. I was about 18 then. And I told my sister, who I was living with when I got home, that this is what happened. Because everybody was in the church. So they're all dancing, singing. So they can't see what's happening outside. So those of us who are the security team outside, that we are the only guys who are witness to this. So I told my sister when I got outside. And she said, if the woman had faith, the child that wouldn't have happened. That woman probably didn't have faith. She didn't have enough faith.
Wow.
Man. So when I look at that, I start thinking about how many people have died in the name of where I have faith. And then with this coronavirus thing, I'm not surprised at some of the simple things that could be done. And people are not even watching some government officials who have access to better healthcare, telling you that, well, why should you take it seriously? Why should you, like a Kogi state governor saying, it's a European disease, we don't need vaccines. That motherfucker caught COVID a few months ago. I know someone with access to the guy. Person said the guy had COVID. The man got treatment. Then he's coming to tell you, we don't need vaccines. Why do we need it? It's for the Europeans. It's not our problem. We don't have it in our state. How many people died in the state? Now they are finally admitting that Nigeria has a lot more cases than South Africa. But it's finally coming out. Because I said this on my podcast a few months back, that Nigeria, I know Nigerians were rubbing in South Africans' faces, like, oh, you look at you, you people, you're locked down, all that. But we don't keep data in Nigeria. So we deny ourselves. Mm-hmm. Everything adds up. It adds up. But when you say, I want to go to church, my mother is 84. I want to go to church. They didn't allow me to go to church. I said, if you die, you know I'm not coming to your funeral.
Wow.
You can die. I'm not coming. I'm not wasting. What am I burdening myself? I'm not coming to die for you.
So just for the record, so currently, South Africa has got 1.5 million cases of coronavirus. So based on what you're saying is that because Nigeria doesn't have a good, you know, track record with keeping records, they could probably have more than 1.5 million cases. Is that right?
Just yesterday, BBC Africa confirmed that the CDC in Nigeria released a report based on, I don't know why the word is escaping
report,
my mind.
Report, yeah.
But they did a research and found out that a lot more people, just in Lagos alone, has more than that that number.
Mm.
Their research alone showed that just Lagos alone, Lagos has, you know how crowded Lagos is.
Yeah. Mm.
And it showed that a lot more people, the blood they tested showed that a lot more people have caught COVID without even knowing when they caught it.
They already had the antibodies.
Exactly. And so based on their research, they were already estimating 3.4 million from Lagos. and Enugu, combination of those two. Now, earlier in the pandemic, Kogi had a large, they had this mass, where they had a mass burial of bodies. Mm. And they tried to shush it, but it got leaked out. And foreign media got hold of it, like that cover Africa, like BBC Africa.
And Reuters. And
my home girl, the one who I mentioned earlier that's in South Africa, she pointed out that this Kogi governor guy, that guy is an idiot. He's trying to hide this stuff, but it's COVID that's killing people there. Mm. They hid it for like almost a month. They try to deny. Then after like a month, they're like, oh, yes, actually it's COVID. Then the same guy now, just a few months ago, is now saying, we don't have COVID here. Nobody with COVID here. We don't need vaccines. We should waste money and buy vaccines and give people. We don't need a COVID state. It's only for Europeans.
Let's talk about this real quick, because it's something to talk about, I think. Do any of you guys really, really, are you going to take the vaccine?
Straight up.
Oh, hell yeah, I will.
Oh, straight up. Immediately it comes near me. Injected in my veins, yeah.
Like heroin.
Are you dumb? Yes, what? I know someone who lost someone personally from, and you guys probably all do at this point, know someone who's passed away from it. And I just feel like, I think at this point to try to have like, you know, edgy opinions about the whole thing is sometimes insensitive to the people that have lost people. But I don't know. That's me being PC, you know. What are your thoughts?
Okay, this is me, nah? This is me not being PC. First of all, if I must pay for this thing, you can keep it.
Oh, wait, they're making people pay for it?
Yeah, that's
Let me see it this way, right? See it this way. At the time when, you know, the vaccine was still unavailable to the masses, some companies actually took advantage of that and they hooked up these rich people packages where they could go to the UAE and Bahrain and Dubai and then...
Yeah, politicians in Nigeria are doing that.
That's what I was going to mention that.
See what I'm saying? See what I'm saying? So they had to go and pay to get a vaccine. So I'm saying...
How much are they paying? Because I really want to know. For my Nigerian people,
Dubai makes money off those kind of stuff too. People don't, that's another part of the tourism that put on.
I beg, is it affordable? Because I have people.
Because I know somebody in Dubai that I can ask. I'll ask him if he'll be willing to tell me.
Yeah, I'll reach out to you. Connect. All
there
right.
We go. There we go. Yeah. So
networking.
The vaccine black market.
Hey, this one is real money. Unlike that, was it Madagascar? And
the cure.
My cousin tried to sell that in my home state in Yenagoa. I was like, bro, get out of here. What are you selling? I have some roots. I said, but you can get roots. What do you mean you have some roots from Madagascar? You know where Madagascar is on the map?
Come on now. Let's not add on to that concept of wiping out Madagascar from the map. Because, you know, people that get Africa tattoos always forget to put the little island.
Madagascar.
No, it's not right, guys. It's not right. You must include it.
Exactly. Man.
You know, all African countries and islands matter. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But back to my point.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but back to my point of the vaccine. Yeah, first of all, like, I'm not paying for it. Government must pay for it, number one.
Agree.
Number two, this AstraZeneca or Pfizer vaccine where I must go take it two times. Fuck that. I don't want it. I want the Johnson & Johnson.
I think Moderna, you have to take it twice as well.
All of them, you have to take it, except for Johnson.
Exactly.
You have to take twice.
The only vaccine.
Said that's the one.
The only vaccine that I will be willing to take is the one from Johnson & Johnson because it's one take.
Yeah. But like, why?
Yeah. Johnson & Johnson is known for being shit.
Yeah, exactly.
You see?
Wait, no, but Stan, why though?
I know where you guys are going with Johnson & Johnson, but I point you guys to this fact, though. You see, in the stories here, we are getting, you see, white people sneaking real hard to get the vaccine. They're not waiting. Black people are waiting. I want this. I want the sun to be shining. I want umbrella red. I want this. I want rain boots. You hear one white man is coming there and say, my great grandfather was black. Give me the vaccine. This one will come. My father's mistress was black. They want to take, that should be your sign right there. White people are fighting really hard to get the vaccine. Yeah, just give me. My friends have taken, I know a bunch of my friends.
But it's the same white people who were queuing up for toilet paper when lockdown was starting. You hear what I'm saying? Like, I mean, are you just going to get it because you're following the crowd, or...
Because no, I'm not going to... You're going to get it because there's a pandemic.
I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I'm hella paranoid. You hear what I'm saying? Like, not just of COVID. I'm paranoid of HIV. I'm paranoid of all these illnesses. And you know how I avoid... I don't know how to avoid COVID, right? But things like HIV, if they say it's transmitted sexually, you know, just be safe. Or don't even engage too much in that shit. You get what I'm saying? Like, there are disciplinary measures that you can apply. Right now, what I'm trying to do is make sure that I never have to leave my house to make money. Because maybe my chances of catching COVID increase when I have to go outside and interact with others. I'm just paranoid, man. I watched...
Wait, where is America at right now on the vaccines? Like, who are they vaccinating now?
Well, you know, now we have a government, finally. We have a government, finally.
Thank God.
Just barely... He officially took office January 20th, so it's just barely a month he's been there. So the official plan is to start with older people in emergency, essential workers, but like healthcare. For me personally, I would have had teachers. Teachers should have been in there because these Republican states, they never close now. Republican states, that's another problem. They've all been like, we want the economy to be open. We are fighting saving it. You can't save the economy if people are sick. I don't understand what kind of business logic is that. If people are sick, what kind of economy do you have? But teachers should have been in there. So it's like back and forth in some places. But if you have places that are more Democrats, they target communities that are most vulnerable. So like Black, Hispanic communities. But the elderly are at the forefront right now of receiving it. So my friends who work in healthcare, they've all received it. People work for the state in like transportation. So like, unfortunately, my friend died. He was one of the first people that died. He worked in the railway system with trains. So he was a train conductor and he was also an immigrant too. So a lot of immigrants died too in New York City. New York City is crowded. And we had a 24-hour train service.
Train system,
The train system. So I think most of their staff are people in those kind of jobs are being targeted. We ran out of vaccines not long ago, but now they say they've bought enough that should. They claim to have gotten over 100 million or something. So I'm just being like, I'm a fan of disabilities. I don't want to be like an old grandpa and say, hey.
I'm old.
Two girls did that yesterday.
I heard.
But they already got the first shot. I'm like, why did you not catch them? What kind of career move is that? I mean, I admire them for that. If they should have gone for the Johnson shot. Just go to where the Johnson shot is.
It's true, they'd have been good.
They would have been good. But they went for Moderna or AstraZeneca. Like, look at you.
Look at you. Because now you must wait 6 weeks and then remember that, oh, by the way, I went there as an old person. I must get my wig.
You have to get the game back on. Maybe you were down and you say your favorite. Oh, that's a great show. Wait, what happened to your voice? Huh?
Now things are awkward. And you only got half the treatment, so you might mess around and get half of COVID. You get cough.
Hey. this is how the X-Men were created. I'm telling you.
Hell no, man. X-Men are supposed to be December 21st. I was waiting for my superpowers.
It could have been
my superpowers, so I can be the dictator I wanted to always be when I was a child.
You wanted to be a dictator?
I thought I misheard.
It's one of the African dreams. Please tell us more.
Nobody told that they were dictators. They just said, you know, you can be in the army and become a general. I said, oh, okay. We didn't tell you that you were, that means dictators.
Yeah, and personally, I don't think, maybe people can actually go for the superpower of being super fast, but I'm just saying, when you have this skin tone over here and you want to wish to be super fast, does that not low-key seem racismo? Because we're already fast without superpowers. So now when I add more, you'd be like, I knew he would choose to be super fast.
Why would you run in the Olympics? That's whack. That's lame. If you're super fast, then you can just run into Elon Musk's house. Okay, you don't want to be African? Take all the Tesla ideas out of his house. Go give it to somebody who wants to. Put yourself on.
Give them to Dangote.
But they're like, what is this? It's not cement. I want cement. Okay. I cannot own monopoly with this. That guy, so he doesn't really exist with him. He's like a Highlander. That's down.
So are you opposed to him and his rise to riches? You know, he's the rich. You know, let me give a different perspective on who that guy is and why I admire him. Mm-hmm. He's the richest black person alive.
Yeah, well, that's good for him. That's all I can say.
I mean, isn't that a title?
In the 90s, there was mid-90s, I was reading a magazine, and they were talking about one of Dangote's rivals, and it was the Cadbury version in Nigeria, and they were competing on sugar. That company is dead now. There were a bunch of cement companies in Nigeria, apart from Dangote back then. The biggest football club at one time was Benue Company Cement, which had the youngest coach who at one point in time I wanted to be, he was like my role model, because he was at age 22 and he was coaching professional league in Nigeria.
Wow, that's crazy. Ooh.
And Eagle Cement was in Port Harcourt. One of my aunts worked for Eagle Cement, and I remember how Eagle Cement staff, because they were unionized, the way their staff were taken care of was like, if you got to that mid-manager level, you got accommodation, you were well taken care of. It wasn't like, okay, life was bad. It was like, you know, and then things went to shit. I don't know what happened, the whole management sideways, but it was a thing of pride if you worked there, you know, if you were an employee there. Then slowly but steady, you know, it's like the company is not doing well. We need Dangote to come save this company. Okay, Dangote comes in. All these companies start disappearing. Their football clubs disappear too. Every other thing disappears. And then you go talk to the people who work there. Does it have that same feel as the people who were working there in the 90s, in the early 2000s? You don't have that same feel. It's different now. I mean, only one person owns everything. There's no competition. It's just, well, we got one, the richest man now, right? People don't understand that back then, you saw the difference. If you never saw it with your own eyes, you won't understand the difference. Now look at the refinery Dangote is building in Lagos.
Mm-hmm.
You're building a refinery there. You have Apapa as an example of an area that they made industrial. Apapa used to be residential, and then they set up the port, and then it started changing over the years, and then now it's like trash. It's literally like trash because of tankers and all the stuff there. But it didn't happen in one day. Same thing with the refinery. Where they put the refinery at, there's only one road to get in there now. And Nigerians love road. You can't develop with only roads. A railway should have been set up. They should have put a railway there. But I still remember Dangote's his vice president or executive manager, whatever that guy is, one of his senior executives, saying, we don't need a railway. We have tankers. We're going to use tankers to be transporting crude oil from the refinery into Nigeria. How many people die every year from tanker accidents in Nigeria? Richest man in Africa. Why are you asking questions? Why are you going to bring us against him? He's the richest black man. Just because he's the richest, should the system remain the same? You can't ask the man. You can't hold him accountable. But right? Guess who we're going to hold accountable? Every other person. There's no government in Nigeria that's going to dare questions of Dangote. You're dead. You're gone. It's over.
Really? So the homie is on some mafia level.
He's God. Nigerians act religious and all that. Like, yeah, go, bring one pastor that's going to say, let me go. I'm going to challenge Dangote. Your church will close down. Show me the pastor who has that power. Go and challenge him. That's the real God there. His family is the God. You can't. I mean, like, you know, so you see all that.
So he doesn't have a riches, rags to riches story.
He's rich to riches.
Yeah, exactly.
That's rich to riches.
If they're going to tell the story right. Don't be advertising the story like, hey, it was some guy who was taking care of cows. And then one day he's figured, okay, if I sell 10 of my cows, then I'm going to invest here. And man, bro, get out of here with that bullshit. I don't hate the guy, but I'm against this idea of we must just toe the line because he's a billionaire. Yeah. But we're going to hate other billionaires, though, who are from other places. I'm like, if you're going to hold everyone accountable. If you're not going to hold everyone accountable, then forget about it. Cement is not good for us. That's another issue we still need to talk about. Climate change. If you're in Port Harcourt when there's power outages, see how hot the houses become. Houses built with cement. See how hot it is. You think Dangote is the person who wants to listen to you on climate change and all those kind of ideas when he's making his money off something like that? But if you've been in a house built with mud, in different parts of Nigeria, and there's power outages, then you don't see the difference.
Yeah. I wanted to say, Raphael, I'm afraid to ask your thoughts about Hush Puppy.
Hey, there's not. Don't be afraid there. I don't. Hush Puppy is not. How will I say it? I don't know. He's not the problem. He has never been the problem. I hung out with Yahoo boys. People thought I was a Yahoo boy before I left Nigeria. I lived in Surulere. I haven't seen a lot of Yahoo boys. Yahoo boys didn't know how to. They didn't even know how to type, spell their email, spell check. I was doing spell check for a few of them. I did spell check for a few of them. Because I look at it, and I was like, this is terrible.
But you were freelancing for Yahoo people.
Not internet.
He was a hired gun.
Time because my cousin's house, they used to gather there. One of my cousins, actually, that's how he made his claim to fame. And that's how I saw the hypocrisy in the family. Because as soon as that boy got money, everybody started talking to him differently. And I was like, this guy made money from Yahoo. But, you know, now the language changed. You know, he's not welcome. And now we're in the house, and then this guy gets a call and it's like, hey, Maga, they call. Shh, everybody quiet. And someone calling from the United States. He's claiming to be the Minister of Justice. He was terrible, couldn't speak English. English was upside down. But the white man didn't even care because the white man was like, oh, this how much money I'm going to make? Okay. And I was I'm writing notes like, hey, man, that's wrong information you're giving this guy. What the hell are you doing? If you're supposed to be minister, you're supposed to know this stuff. And he was like, hey, man, you should come work with us. I said, hell no, I can't. But they were like, they were going to give me, buy time for internet. So they were like, hey, okay, if you need internet time, just let me check this email. Is the spelling right? I'm like, yeah, you need to change this. Yeah, this is not spelled right. So I do that. And they'll give me like 1 hour or 30 minutes, depending on their mood. And I was always, you know, you have your eyes on the door. If the police come in, because the police don't care. As far as you're young, good looking, they grab everybody in the cafe. So you have your eyes on the door. You know your back entrance to escape from. After I left Nigeria, 2 weeks after I left, police came into that cyber cafe and shot one of them in the legs when he was trying to run away.
Interesting.
Whatever money Hush Puppy stole, the only thing was he was stupid to advertise it. But Hush Puppy was.
But did you
stop the problem?
Did you hear the latest? That he was also freelancing for hackers in North Korea.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so
they say they paid him up to $1.5 billion.
Billion.
The guy was staying. He was renting a Versace apartment.
Wow.
Renting.
If that amount of money is real, that's why I couldn't do that lifestyle, man. I couldn't do that job because if I was in that job, I'll be like my cousin. Because my cousin, I've never seen him on social media. He owns a contracting business in Nigeria now. He gone legit from that, but I still believe he does it on the side. So that would have... Like, I grew up... I went to school in Benin City. You know how many boys from Benin City went into that lifestyle? A lot of them.
Yeah.
So it was... like, you know how it is in the States where they say you've got three options. It's either you play basketball or football, you rap, or you're selling drugs. Was it the same situation then Benin City? You must go to school... You go hustle or you're going to be a Yahoo boy. Is that what it was?
I probably in a different way because we didn't even know Yahoo existed. But Benin, the difference that Benin, you were expected to graduate high school by age of 16. If you're older than 16 and you haven't graduated high school, you're considered a dummy. So I left high school. I left Benin City for Ibadan and I graduated high school at age of 16 because I repeated class once. So I was considered a dummy already.
Mm-hmm.
But many of the boys, so the intelligent boys came out from there, and those guys just, I don't know how when it broke out there, but Benin boys are the ones who started traveling by road into Europe through the Sahara Desert. They figured it out, and it became an industry. So I guess Yahoo just branched out from there, and like, hey, instead of doing this, you can do this one too. And hey, man, that just, I don't know, just happened.
Interesting.
And so other people try to compete with them, but the other ones were the guys who couldn't really spell or couldn't do it. So you could see the difference. So it's like, okay, you want to compete with us? We're the smarter ones. So, yeah. As soon as I got to America, the guy who even tried, who I said should have been deported, he's a Bini boy in Brooklyn here, but he tried to even swindle me. I called him. I was like, dude, you know, we both grew up in Bini. I know you, so I know your trick. And I was in the Navy. He wanted to be shipping stuff bought with illegal credit cards to me on the base. Like, I work for the federal government. I'm supposed to be your brother. We were the same crew hanging out in secondary school, junior secondary. He's like, oh, my brother, I forgot. That's what he asked me. He didn't even offer me money. You're just like, I'm going to be... I live with my mom. I can't receive packages at my mom's house. So I'll send it to you. I'll drive 7 hours to your house and come pick it up. I'm like, We grew up in the same area. What are you trying to do? And we're in America. You know, they can track you easily. I said, oh, I will change. Yeah, they caught him 2 years later. Got arrested for credit card fraud. And then other boys, Benin boys, they were calling me like, hey, man, you down in America? Hey, find me. Just send me one checkbook. Just anybody's checkbook. Just send me one. I'm not worried. Just send me. I'm not worried. Just, I'll give you court. Yeah, I'm the one who they will put me on TV. Nigerian Prince, we caught him.
Interesting. So Uno said he had a story to share with us.
I already told Shiro and Matilda this story, but like, you know, it's just, I'm listening to Raphael speak, and you know, like, for me, man, I've never been to Nigeria, and I can't imagine living in a country that has 246 million people, a population that big. You know, when you guys are talking about everybody knows Lagos is crowded, you know, I'm like, man, like it's such a crazy thing to imagine that, like, there's so many people in one country. Because on this side, you know, we've got like a fraction of that, 50 million, and it's like a lot still.
60, yeah, 50, 60, somewhere there, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, damn, it's not that much of a wonder that, you know, if that population, that country is a population of 246 million, you probably, everybody knows somebody who knows somebody who's from Nigeria. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like the Nigerian experience is something that you get all over the world, you know?
I helped somebody who had a phone booth. And I helped him run his business once or twice when I was in that area. And the day will come, that's an old woman. My Pekin, I want to call my Pekin. Where your Pekin day? He did this number. I look, what number code is this? You bring out the diary and look it up. The person's in Serbia. Wow. Okay. Mm. How do you get to Serbia? What are you doing in Serbia? This was like 2001. I want to call my Pekin. Where your Pekin day? Armenia. What? When you meet some people like, I know one Nigerian in God knows the end of the world is a Benin person. Those are the guys who go, they're the astronauts that will go discover the place. And then call us like, hey, it's safe, come. You're Nigerian. But, you know, Nigeria, a lot of people, the majority you meet outside Nigeria are Yoruba, Igbo. Those are the majority you meet in the Edo.
And why is that?
So the Hausa people, they just like to stay inside Nigeria. What is it?
Outside. I'm going to interview someone of Hausa Fulani heritage. I think she has something else. But there's way more than those groups in the north. In a northern state like Adamawa. Adamawa has like 66 tribes in there.
Jesus.
And the day I found out, I was like, how many people are there? I don't know. We don't know. If you ask many people from southern Nigeria, we don't know how many people really exist. There's like 300 tribes in Nigeria. So there are lots of Nigerians we don't know. We don't know, really. But
I agree.
It's intentional to always say not is all Hausa Fulani. It's an intentional thing because if you have it that way, you can hate everybody there. You can have a system that makes them all powerful. Everybody is like, you know, Dangote people, Buhari people. Like, you know? So it's part of the oppression, but it's a tactic borrowed from colonialism. It is. Because it's all part of this. That's why the restructuring of Nigeria has to happen. Or the unfortunate thing which people don't like to hear, I say it on every platform, is there will be another civil war. There will. It's already building up. It's unfortunately building up really seriously. But I think if they don't get the right people in there to restructure, and then we have that meeting. Because your official in Nigeria expired in 2014. The paperwork that said, just do a Google search.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, do a Google search. The amalgamation of Nigeria, when did it expire? Just type it on Google right now.
The amalgamation of Nigeria.
Yeah, when did it expire?
Oh, for context, that just means like when they joined the northern and southern protectorates or whatever. Like they were governed separately before, and then when they put them together, they basically called the region Nigeria.
Yeah, so there was, but that means the official groundwork of the foundation, it doesn't exist.
It's holy just, shit, he's right. I mean,
so it just on, you can see why there's always divisions here. Like me, I'm always loyal to my tribe. I'm this one, I'm always loyal to my tribe. I'm always loyal to this. You're not loyal to, there's no foundation of its country. Only one will play football match. When Super Eagles win, that's the first time I hugged the Hausa man on the street. Well, I didn't know.
Even that is becoming a myth now because, like, Super Eagles isn't funded well.
Oh, yeah. Now we don't care about even building up the football at home. So we have foreign-born player.
What the hell is happening?
Yeah, you know, trying to get Ross Barkley, you know, and then to try to play for the Super Eagles. I see that. So there it is. So there it is. Man, this really was a very interesting episode of Africana Podcast. You know, we got to give a shout-out one time to Raphael from White Label American. Hey, we've learned a lot of things from you, right?
So much.
Hey, shout-out.
Hey, I respect you guys, man. The honors are mine. You guys are doing an amazing job, like I said earlier. Yeah, thank Africa Pod first for bringing us together. Matilda, I hope we'll be in touch afterwards.
So you can send me the connects for the people that are selling vaccines. Oh, trust me, we're connected.
Let me test it. No, can see that I didn't grow horns. Or I might grow a third eye and start, you know, I might win that lottery finally and be like, I got money.
But yeah, for real. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming through, Raphael.
Hey, my pleasure.
All the best with your podcast, man.
Thank you.
Anybody who's listening, you can just search White Label American on any podcast streaming platform. You'll find it there, right?
On all
platforms.
I'm also on Patreon. Actually, one of my boys in Cape Town just signed up for my Patreon. I was surprised. I was like, bro, you in Cape Town? He used to complain about weed on Twitter. Like, he couldn't buy weed early in the lockdown. So I was like,
wow.
I guess you saved all that money from the weed. Bring it to me.